This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Saturday, April 29th marks the 25th anniversary of the Los Angeles uprising, when communities in South LA responded to a mostly white jury in Simi Valley that acquitted three Los Angeles police officers of all charges in the beating of Rodney King. The acquittals set off 4 days of civil unrest, garnering international media attention and forever changing the city of LA. Now, as police killings and abuse of Black Americans continues unabated in LA and beyond, the latest Los Angeles public opinion poll, which is conducted every 5 years, has found the lack of trust of police continues to run along racial and class lines. Nearly 70% of LA's white residents trust police to do the right thing, while less than 40% of blacks agree. A similar split is observed between the wealthiest and poorest sectors of the city, respectively. And for the first time since the poll began in 1997, a whopping 70% of LA's residents fear another uprising like the one in 1992 is likely within the next 5 years. In the age of Donald Trump, who has promised a law and order approach to the U.S.'s quote-unquote inner cities, police may indeed be given a green light to continue business as usual. My guest is Jody Armour. He is the Roy P. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California, which is located not too far from where the uprising happened in 1992. Jody is also the author of Negrophobia and Reasonable Racism, The Hidden Costs of Being Black in America. And he is a Soros Justice Senior Fellow of the Open Society Institute Center on Crime, Communities, and Culture, and the Race and Criminal Justice Correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome back to the show, Jody.
Great to be back with you, Sonali.
So let's reflect on the uprising for those in our audience that were either too young to remember them or don't live in Los Angeles. What people call riots, others call uprising, obviously didn't happen in a vacuum. And even the Rodney King beatings and the acquittal of the police wasn't really enough to explain it, right? I mean, before 1992, we had Watts. Can you explain the context of what happened in 1992 and why it was so important?
Yeah, well, 1992 was foreshadowed in the music, in the popular culture, Sonali. You can go back to a group like NWA in... 1988, saying, lyrics like, F the police coming straight from the underground, a young N-word got it bad because I'm brown and not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. That's what they were talking about in the music coming out of South Central and out of Compton and out of the Southlands, black communities. And so, really, when you got to 91, 92, you had a deep reservoir of resentment that had accumulated between many in the black community and the police force that they saw as an occupying force that was applying broken windows, zero tolerance policing to their communities. And the police acknowledge that today. When I have them here in forums at USC, they will say, yeah, you know, in the 80s and 90s, if you lived in these neighborhoods around us, and they were referring to South Central, our approach was if you spit on the sidewalk, if you jaywalk, you were down on the ground with your face in the concrete and your hands behind your back. And that kind of policing laid the background. That would set the stage for that spark that came not when the Rodney King beating was first aired and saturated the airwaves. Remember, this was kind of the first time we saw the 24-hour news cycle coming up. And so you saw this brutal image repeated every 10, 15 minutes. You couldn't turn on the news television without seeing it again, and yet people did not explode in violence. There was no, whether you want to call it riot or uprising, we can talk about that. How people describe it says more about the observer than the observed. It's like a Rorschach ink blot test. But they didn't go off when the beating first saturated the airwaves. They waited for justice. and they didn't explode until the promise of justice seemed so flagrantly flouted by the Simi Valley jury acquittal of the four officers that they'd seen on the video with their own eyes beating Rodney King. So the jury was telling them, don't trust your lying eyes, or what we saw there was not unreasonable when it comes to a black man and blue law enforcement subduing that black man. And so that, it was a loss of the criminal justice system's moral credibility and moral legitimacy that led to the uprising. That's what caused the explosion. Mm-hmm. And we see that today. With Trayvon Martin, the Black Lives Matter hashtag didn't spring up when George Zimmerman first shot Trayvon Martin. No, it was when the jury acquitted George Zimmerman that the hashtag shot up, because again, it seemed like the promise of justice was flagrantly flouted in the courtroom by a jury. And the moral credibility and moral legitimacy of the criminal justice system was exposed, was undermined.
Now, Jody, what role did poverty play in South LA, and this feeling that not only were the police being able to get away with abusing poor, particularly black South LA residents, but also that there was unemployment, there were no jobs about, you know, it was easy to simply condemn people as, quote, looters. But the truth is, of course, South LA struggled and continues to struggle with economic blight. And in the years after the uprising, it was promised that the city would address those issues and there would be a revival. Has that been successful?
Well, no. What we're really talking about there is a meaningful redistribution of wealth and power and, establishment, entrenched power is reluctant to do that sort of thing. In fact, there wasn't even any real police reform after the 92 uprising. Even though there was lots of chatter and there were reports, it isn't until you get to 2000 that you get a consent decree between the LAPD and the Justice Department. And that consent decree was only came from the Rampart scandal, which was so egregious. Again, you know, it's like taking Training Day and Serpico and LA Confidential, rolling them all in one, and you still don't have the amount of corruption that was going on in Rampart with Rafael Perez and company, right? It took that to create reform in the LAPD and bring forth the consent decree. And so there have been some changes in the LAPD, but there's still a whole lot to be made and a long way to go, and especially when it comes to poverty governance. How much do we use the police as a form of poverty governance? We really see it down on Skid Row under the Safer Cities Initiative, where they started sending the police in to make people go to the mega shelters and make them solve their pathologies and their inner deficiencies, that kind of approach. So very often the police are a form of poverty governance and playing a role that they really shouldn't be playing.
And of course, the situation in South LA is indicative of what we see in a broader way around the city. The Los Angeles Police Department continues to be the leader in killings and officer-involved shootings around the country, according to tallies kept by independent investigative media outlets. Because, of course, the federal government doesn't even tally those issues, those incidents. So how do we put this into a national context? Because that, as we said, the videotaped beating of Rodney King was the very first time that the public at large around the country and the world got to see this police abuse. Today, people walking around with their smartphones are able to capture this a lot more and expose what has continued under the cover of darkness to plague particularly Black Americans. And now we have this president in power who, unlike our previous president, who at least paid some lip service to police, to addressing police abuse, this new president seems to be going back to the old approach, the approach under Ronald Reagan, which is we have to get tough with our inner cities, law and order, et cetera, et cetera. Are we basically seeing Trump and his Attorney General Jeff Sessions try to revive that failed model that began in the 1980s that we know only led to things like the Rodney King beating?
Oh, yeah, we have been finally awakened to what we call now the new Jim Crow, the injustice of mass incarceration, right? Michelle Alexander's 2010 book, New Jim Crow, characterized it that way. This turn toward punitive, lock them up and throw away the key approaches to poverty governance, especially because a disproportionate number of the people who are committing street crimes are coming from truly disadvantaged ranks. Even in South Central, you can see that there are communities in South Central like View Park and Baldwin Hills that are middle class black communities that aren't being policed and weren't being policed in the 80s and 90s nearly as aggressively as the communities that weren't as privileged economically. So what that translates into today is that we see that 25 years later, Sonali, ain't nothing changed but the year it is. In terms of the willingness of the public to believe that police officers should be given as much latitude as humanly possible and then some to boot, and that people just look at these videos differently. Look at Walter Scott, for example. He was shot multiple times in the back running away from a police officer, and at the time that the jury was declared a deadlock and a mistrial was declared, five of the jurors said they still hadn't decided. They weren't sure whether they saw anything unreasonable. And a sixth juror said, I'm absolutely certain I didn't see anything unreasonable. That's six jurors who looked at that same video again with a man running away and said, I'm not sure that police officer did anything wrong. So that's in 2017-16. What has changed but the year in the intervening time? And Trump has just been barefaced about it. Trump has said, you know, what has always been there, those jury acquittals were there before Trump came into office. They were there. Those acquittals were there when Obama was in office and before. So what you really have is a large segment of the American public that really views race and police that way. And Trump has just made it barefaced. He said, these people have always been out here. These are my supporters. And I'm not using dog whistle politics. I'm going to go straight for the jugular. I'm going to say, I'm going to put Sessions in, who makes it clear that he doesn't mind mass incarceration in the new Jim Crow as long as we're talking about black folk disproportionately. You know, there's not the same sympathetic identification, care, and concern. To understand the indifference of the response to mass incarceration, you have to go back to Hurricane Katrina. Remember those black folks standing in the Ninth Ward with their hands in the air and the water's coming up to their belly, and FEMA couldn't get its act together 4 days in. You had Sean Penn handing out water because FEMA couldn't get its act together because there was no panic of empathy for those black folks, like there was a panic of empathy for the 9/11 victims. Well, there's no panic of empathy for black prisoners, black inmates, and Sessions is representing that, and he's representing the way a lot of American people feel.
So then it should come as no surprise that these poll results that I quoted show, and it's very similar to other polls that have been conducted nationwide, that we see these splits between along racial and class lines. The wealthier and whiter you are, the more you trust the police, because of course the police target you less. And the poorer and darker your skin is, the less you trust the police, because you tend to be on the receiving end. And then also there the sense that people are worried that a riot / uprising is more likely than ever. 70% of respondents said that they think that there will be such a blow up, if you will, in Los Angeles in the next 5 years. So while those poll numbers about the trust for police make sense, how do you explain this expectation that people have, that so many Los Angelinos have, of another explosion, another riot or uprising?
Yeah, well, starting with the poll results, it shows you that once again, we're living in different social realities. People actually perceive the same stimuli coming in, they give it a radically different interpretation along racial lines. And it's stunning to recognize it, but it's important to recognize it because otherwise you won't understand things like the November 8th, November 9th results. You won't understand how many people share that point of view. When they hear inclusion, diversity, and equity, they get very defensive and upset about that. And, you know, Sessions and Bannon and company are clear evidence of that. Now, Angelino's thinking that the conditions are ripe for yet another urban conflagration triggered by some kind of police misconduct, perhaps. Doesn't come as a surprise, but it should come as a wake-up call that if they recognize that the conditions are there, that the stage is set, why not do something to de-escalate now? Why not do something to provide more jobs, provide a real social safety net, do something about the crumbling schools so there's not so much frustration and alienation that can get pent up and explode it with triggered by some injustice, which is going to happen. You know, human beings are fallible, so there's going to be more injustices at the hands of police. And how we respond to that, how the community responds to that, is going to really depend on whether they think there is justice occurring in their everyday lives. So why we don't intervene and do something about the criminogenic conditions or the conditions of frustration and alienation that lead to these conflagrations, that is a matter of political will, and we just haven't had the political will.
Well, then finally, Jody, in this age of Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions and these coming crackdowns, how much more important is the movement for Black Lives? The Black Lives Matter chapters that are around the country were struggling to get justice under a supposedly liberal Democrat, under Barack Obama, and they, you know, had a hard time. I mean, as I said, Obama paid lip service. His Justice Department under Loretta, first Eric Holder and then Loretta Lynch, paid some lip service. They began investigations. They, you know, put things in writing, and, you know, in terms of actual numbers of beatings and abuse going down, we're yet to see that. In terms of charges and convictions of abusive police, we're yet to see that. But under Trump, even just talking about it and addressing it is a bigger challenge, it appears.
Oh, yeah. Black Lives Matter has really changed the national conversation over the last 2.5 to 3 years, to be sure. But we also have to recognize that there are some, let me put it this way, Sonali. After the election, there were a lot of people who were shocked by the results. And, you know, there were gatherings of folks who wanted to talk about it. And my position was that Black Lives Matter folk, many didn't get up on November 9th and to any shock or surprise. They had been saying this is the America we live in all along, that we live in an America that does have sympathies that run towards a Bannon type or a Sessions type, and or at least they aren't so averse, they aren't so you know, offended by somebody who has those opinions that they're not willing to support them. So it was really a lot of white liberals who on November 9th were suddenly woke, were suddenly recognizing what Black Lives Matter had been saying all along. And I, you know, what I was saying after, you know, and some of my friends was, it looks like woke is the new black, you know, after November 8th. And so now I hope there's a broader broader consensus that there is a real problem out here in America when it comes to inclusion, diversity, and equity, when it comes to racial justice and economic justice. And we can get now more woke folk on the same page, unifying and rallying together and coming up with a political solution now that we're all on the same page.
Well, Jody, I want to thank you as always for helping us put all of these issues into context. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sanaa. Great talking to you.
My guest is Jody Armour. He's the Roy B. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California and the author of Negrophobia and Reasonable Racism, The Hidden Costs of Being Black in America, and a Soros Justice Senior Fellow of the Open Society Institute Center on Crime, Communities, and Culture. He is the Race and Criminal Justice Correspondent for our program. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.